Okay, so welcome to the Parental Thriving Podcast. I'm your host, Melissa Bojeya, journeying this path of motherhood with you. And today with me, I have a special guest, a very special guest for me. She's my mentor, both.
That makes me feel good.
both for my parenting and my work. So welcome, Casey Ororti. How are you?
Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be on. I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It's just the start of my day. So,
yeah. And here we are winding down to go to sleep. Okay. So can we just, first of all, start by maybe giving us a bit of information about you and your work, how you came into this journey of positive discipline before we start?
Sure. So I am a positive discipline lead trainer and coach, and I am the adolescent lead at Sproutable. My company, Joyful Courage, recently merged with another company so that we can serve the expanse of birth all the way through the teen years. And that's a new and exciting venture that's very fresh. I was a elementary school teacher a long, long time ago, before I had kids. And I loved being in relationship with the families of my students and really noticed how powerful it was for the kids in the classroom for me to have relationships with their parents. And then when I became a parent myself, I lived in a really small community. And when considering staying in the classroom while raising really young kids, we didn't have a lot of options for childcare. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful for being able to have the choice to stay home with my kids, but I was still, you know, I'm a teacher at heart. And so one of the things that I started to learn about as a teacher and classroom management was kind of a style of being in relationship with kids. And so I wasn't at positive discipline yet, but I was intrigued by learning more about taking this philosophy that I was learning and using it with parents. And so I did, and I got trained and I started working with parents. And there was something after about 2 years of doing this other program, there was something that just kind of started to rub me wrong about what I was delivering to parents. And I had a really good friend who would always tell me, like, yeah, I see what you're doing. And, you know, you might want to just think about checking out this positive discipline thing because it was really useful for us. And so I finally decided, you know what, I'm going to see what else is out there. And there was a training happening like 3 weeks later in Seattle. I live outside of Seattle in the United States, in Washington State. And I went to this training, and at the time my kids were like 1 and 4, and it was hard. I was having a hard time. All the things that I thought, you know, I'm never going to do that to my kids, you know, about how I was raised, everything was showing up. And I was like, oh my God, this model really lives inside of me. And I'm really struggling, especially with my oldest, who was not like high needs or intense or anything. She was just regular, typical developing. It was me that was really struggling with the dynamic between her and her brother and me and her. And so I did the positive discipline training, and it made such an impact on me as a parent that I knew I could no longer teach what I had been teaching. And I just went headfirst into spreading the word of positive discipline in my little community. And then, you know, kind of started working for an organization in Seattle called Sound Discipline, and working with classroom teachers around bringing positive discipline into classrooms, which was really powerful. And, you know, eventually started writing a blog because I noticed that parents were like, well, you know, this is all great, but what's it like in real life? Like, you know,
yeah.
And so I started writing about what it was like in real life, like the messiness of my own practice, because I have it all down in my head,
yeah,
you know, but then you are, confronted by a child and they're doing their own thing. And then it's, that's the real practice of like, can I show up right now? Can I show up right now regulated when I'm actually really mad or really upset, hurt, afraid, right? That's like, I say, that's like the Olympics, right? You got to practice the Olympics. So I started writing a blog. People really resonated with it. And eventually, you know, this is like 2012, 2013, 2014, built a website, you know, and started playing around with online classes and then decided to launch my podcast in 2015, Joyful Courage Podcast. And that was really exciting. I love podcasting. And I've been doing that. That's been a piece of my business ever since. And my kids are now 19 and 16. And it's crazy. And I'm still, you know, it's still really messy. And I'm still stepping into the courage to be imperfect. But I am really proud of the relationships that I have with my kids and the systems that are, you know, just common language. You know, it's what we do as a family. It doesn't mean that everybody's really excited about chores and family meetings and, you know, that kind of thing, but it's a part of the fabric of our family. Yes. And I'm grateful for that. So we've had some really hard times. I've, you know, my daughter went through some really challenging mental health struggles and, you know, dropping out of school and substance use between like 14 and 17, 18. That was really hard and really forced me to question, like, you know, has this been a fluke? Like, have I been duped by positive discipline? What does it look like in this scenario? And it really stretched me to dig deeper and really question what really is the most important thing for me. So yeah, that's my life story.
it's an amazing though. It's like the way I find it, that kind of most of us, to whom I speak, who's a positive discipline trainer or educator, it's like more or less our journey is very similar. There's these similarities, and it heartens, you know, because it gives you that courage, like, okay, I'm really not alone. Because even though, you know, you're not really alone on this journey, sometimes it really feels that you are, despite, you know.
Ah, well, and add the layer of, oh my God, I take people's money to help them with parenting. If they only knew what's happening at my house, they would never want to hire me. You know, like, you know, I know, I get that deeply. When things really started to get tricky, the teen years, I actually was like, okay, I need help. I looked for conversations about parenting teenagers and I couldn't find what I wanted, right? Like, I get really turned off by this idea that, well, if you just do these things, then everything will work out and you'll have a happy, healthy, functioning kid. Mm-hmm. Like, you can do all the things, people, and it's still going to be the journey that it is.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time I did a online summit and I posted in our positive discipline listserv and I said, hey, I'm looking for positive discipline people who either are parenting teenagers or have already parented teenagers whose teens got into mischief, right? Yeah. Like, I don't want to talk to you if you're like, oh my God, the teen years were just so magical. Like, I'm not interested in that conversation.
Is there anyone who had that journey?
Well, I had to filter a few people out. The interesting thing is, you know, people who I have talked to, who did talk about how great the teen years were, now their teenagers are young adults and the relationship is really taking a hit. So it's, you know, it's interesting to me to kind of lift up and out and to really recognize like this whole relationship piece and personal growth piece. You know, for some of us, it's those early years that are really, really the struggle. And you make it through and maybe the teen years aren't so tough, or maybe it's, you know, like this one gal I'm thinking of where it was pretty smooth sailing all the way through, but the young adult years are really tough. Or maybe it's something totally outside of parenting yeah. that is the growth point, you know, chronic illness or messy divorce relationship. Yeah. And maybe that's the place. I just think regardless, like life is going to offer opportunities to grow over and over and over again. And I think for most of us, you know, parenting mm-hmm. is the opportunity, right? Is yeah. the workshop
I'm
for
always,
personal growth and development.
I'm
yeah.
always telling everyone that the greatest gift I got from motherhood is that where before I could put everything under the carpet, now it glares to me in the face and I have to work through the issues that keep coming up and up.
Yeah. And I think it's really powerful to look at that as a gift. I don't mm-hmm. think, I think there's a lot of people who are so resistant to that. And then what we resist persists, right? So I yeah. think that seeing it as a gift, seeing it as an opportunity, like, you know, seeing it as the purpose of this weird thing called mm-hmm. life, right? Mm-hmm. Like we are here to grow. Yeah. We're here to grow. So
what I want us to discuss more in detail a bit today is relationship and trust with teens, because I feel it's like a recurring thing, you know, and now that I have my first teen,
congratulations,
my preteen running near him, it's, mm-hmm. It's really, I don't know, maybe because I didn't start with positive discipline myself from when they were very young. So maybe that does make a difference. You might be able to tell me more. But now I feel that the relationship has had to change so suddenly once they hit the preteen years. And I don't know how to explain it. It had to evolve so differently, and it needed so much more talking on issues. And you know, when they are younger, I found that there didn't need to be so much talking, and kind of you give these are the limits, and yeah. And kind of it much. It's how do I explain it? It's easier, so to speak, to give the limits yeah. And especially when they are health and safety limits, and kind of have them accept them. But once yeah. they become preteens and teens, especially, it's not simply a matter of, look, these are your limits and that is it, you know? And there have yeah. to be so many conversations. And I see a lot of struggle around me on their children not quite trusting the parents. Mm-hmm. So how can we help in building that relationship and trust? It may mm-hmm. be even if they are coming late into positive discipline, maybe they have teens, but they never really use it. Is that possible? Is it, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the window ever closes. You know, mm-hmm. I think that, as you know, when people come through our classes, it takes a week or two or maybe three, and they show up and say, oh, you know, I used some of this with my partner, or wow, this is really useful for me and my relationships at work. So mm-hmm. we kind of couch it in this idea that it's a parenting program, but really yeah. it's a philosophy around how to be in relationship with each other, mm. with other so humans.
True. Yes, it's true.
So I don't want anyone who's listening to think that, like, oh, too late for me. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to point out too, that between 0 and 12, our kids are 12-ish, right? Our kids yes. are like sponges. You know, they take everything that we mm-hmm. share, and they learn and experience, and they're just taking it all in, taking it all in, taking it all in. I do know that there are kids that push back early on, mm-hmm. You know, but their brain is wired to just continue to grow, 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 fill, fill, fill.
Yeah.
And then what happens in the teen years during adolescence is there's a pruning process. So what they're not really focused on, they kind of lose, mm-hmm. but also And I love Dan Siegel's work. He wrote Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teen Brain. Yeah. And he talks about the essence of adolescence and mm-hmm. how they're wired for intense emotion, whether it's mm-hmm. joy or anger. It's a lot, right? Mm-hmm. They're wired for social engagement. So it's developmentally appropriate for them yeah. to pull away and turn from us to their peers. They're mm-hmm. wired for novelty seeking, which is terrifying to us because we mm-hmm. immediately go to like fast driving, drugs, alcohol. But there's yeah. also, you know, stretching into the higher platform when they're jumping into the pool or, you know, being willing to take, there's lots of risks mm-hmm. that we want our kids to take and want, yeah. you know, Dan Siegel says, you know, if it weren't for adolescence, we never would have left the cave. Yeah. Right. And it's yeah. true. It's true yeah. because all the adults are like, oh God, what's out there? And the teenagers are like, let's find out, you know? So
you kind of stop trying and be adventurous yeah. at some point.
yeah. And the fourth piece of brain development is creative exploration. And this is really where our teens push back against status quo. And mm-hmm. we are status quo.
Yeah.
So adolescence is really a time where they're hearing our opinions on things and they're mm-hmm. thinking, really? Maybe you're not right.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more to this and I'm going to go find out and I'm going to let you know about it. Right. We joke about how, oh, now I've got a 14-year-old and I know nothing and they know everything. And in a lot of ways, they're in this really beautiful time period where what is possible is so huge mm-hmm. that it's almost accurate to say they know more than I do because I'm 48 years old. And so, you know, unfortunately over time, my focus, like what yeah. I believe is possible, you know, it kind of starts to whittle down through experience and trial mm-hmm. and error. And it's not a terrible thing, but
yeah.
you know, we kind of lose that, mm-hmm. that sense of wonder and what if, and
yeah, the world is not.
Yeah. So I think it's really important to remember that none of these developmental pieces are character flaws. It's mm-hmm. how our adolescents are wired.
Yeah.
So there's that. Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about, kids that lose trust in their parents. I'm really curious about what you mean there.
Well, I find in our community over here in Malta, where a lot of the teens do not open up to their parents at all. So the parents would literally have no idea what's happening in their life, but the children are not having conversations, difficult conversations. So I don't know. So far, if I look at my own child, if he has difficulty with things, he will come and ask me my opinion and we can discuss mm-hmm. it and so on. But most parents find it strange that he does that. Mm-hmm. And it seems to them like, for them, it's not normal. And it's more mm-hmm. normal that they speak only to their peers and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And I find that it needn't be that the children have to choose between parents and their peers. I think the parents still have a lot of relevance and they still need them for grounding and for having mm-hmm. their center. I always think like something is missing in the relationship mm-hmm. and trust therefore between the children and the parents. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, it's interesting to look at it through the lens of trust because when kids are raised in kind of the traditional behaviorist yeah. model, mm-hmm. you know, there's very clear what's right and wrong, right? Mistakes mm-hmm. are not opportunities to learn. Mistakes yeah. are opportunity. I mean, on one hand they are, but the learning looks like when you make a mistake and do the wrong thing, there's a consequence, there's a yeah. punishment. So you can learn, I'm air quoting, learn from yeah. it. Exactly. When you do the right thing, you get rewarded. We're mm-hmm. happy with you. We're pleased yes. with you. The child receives that feeling of enoughness from mm-hmm. the parent because mm-hmm. they're getting that reward. And so I think when that's been the model, and then they become teenagers, right? Adolescents, mm-hmm. you know, a parent who has been consequencing mistakes and rewarding the right thing is not necessarily a safe person to go to and mm-hmm. say, gosh, I did this thing and now I'm having a really hard time with it, or I'm curious about this thing and can we talk it out? Like yeah. there really isn't room for relationship inside of that model. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so if parents are finding, you know, well, first of all, the parent has to be curious, right? Yes. Because it might be weird. I might be like, well, Melissa, that's weird. My kid doesn't do that. And I'm like, not necessarily fine with it, mm-hmm. but I'm committed to this behaviorist traditional model, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, then there might mm-hmm. be room for you to convince me that something different is possible.
Yeah.
However, if I'm a parent with some curiosity and some desire to make some changes, and I realize I have been a part of the dynamic mm-hmm. that is currently mm-hmm. happening, mm-hmm. then there's some room. And the first thing to do, I always invite parents into this, is to look for where you get to make some amends, mm-hmm. right? Because yeah. if my child won't talk to me, I get curious about how have I created this dynamic?
Yeah.
And where can I take some accountability?
Of course.
And yeah. And so going to our child and saying, like, you know, things are really hard with us, and I notice that you don't really come to me or want to talk to me about what's going on in your life. And I just want to let you know that I love you. And I know in the past I've been really judgmental, mm-hmm. and I'm going to work on that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work on that, you know? So it's really about owning what you've brought and then making a concerted effort to do what you say you're going to do, right? And work on mm-hmm. that non-judgment and catch yourself and have the courage to be imperfect. And, yeah. you know, because if this space doesn't feel safe for your kid to confide in you, mm-hmm. they're not going to, mm-hmm. they're just not.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a long journey. It's not something it's going to change within one conversation or within a month, because obviously if this has been kind of a lifetime thing for the children, they're 13, 14, and it has always been that way, it's not going to suddenly change, obviously.
No. And not only that, they're also like, okay, we'll see.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're saying you're not going to be, you're going to be non-judgmental. Yeah. Okay. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know,
they're going to try us out.
Well, they're going to try us out, but they're also just going to be themselves. And you know, I have a good friend who is a trainer, she does transformation work. And one of her sayings that really sticks with me is right here, right now is the only place that something new and different can occur. Mm-hmm. And sometimes right here, right now is when you've got a 6'2" teenager
yeah.
throwing down some back talk, and you have that moment where you get to decide, am I going to meet him in the back talk, or am I going to feel my feet on the floor, drop my shoulders, take a deep breath, and acknowledge, wow, you're really angry right now, mm-hmm. and not be in reactive, mm-hmm. but instead be in response to what's happening underneath the behavior. And I'll tell you what, sometimes I can do that. And sometimes the emotion comes so quick that I'm like, you won't talk to me. I get up on my tippy toes, because he's actually, my kid is 6'4". So he's really tall. And he's, yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's there's hard. No like perfect, oh, just do this.
Yeah.
And everything will be better. It's a relationship, just like mm-hmm. having a friend that hasn't been a good friend. And then you go to them and say, and they come to you and say, oh, I haven't been a very good friend and I'm sorry. And I'm going to try to change. Like just thinking about that experience and like, okay, well, we'll see, you know? Yeah. because our actions really are what matter most.
It's hard not to react. It's hard. It's mm-hmm. simply, you know, and when it triggers things in us because also what, mm-hmm. how we were brought up ourselves in childhood.
Yep. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, definitely. It's not easy. It's not easy, but it can become easier if we're willing to work on it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes working on it is going to therapy and yeah. getting support around, you know, the baggage that you're carrying on and mm-hmm. slowly passing on to your kids. So that's one way.
Yeah.
You know, another way is working with a coach. Another way is getting a meditation app mm-hmm. and choosing every morning to practice what it feels like to be quiet, a quiet mm-hmm. mind, a still mind. Mm-hmm. You know, another way to practice is to journal. I mean, it's one thing, just like with our kids, you know, to say, it's not okay to hit. It's not okay to bite. Don't do that when you're mad. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do we do? What do they do? What can they do? So the same is true for us, right? Like don't meet them in their back talk. Don't react. So mm-hmm. what do we do?
Yeah.
Right. And I'd love to know, like, what do you do? What helps you, Melissa, when you're in that, in their best times? I know that we can both acknowledge that it's not perfect, but when it works, like when it's useful, like what is something that supports you?
Something that has changed the dynamic a lot for me has been that I take time for self-care every day.
Mm-hmm.
I would, for example, I used to have self-care erratically,
mm-hmm.
but then the reactions would be so big. I would be so angry that when they triggered me, the anger was so big. Mm-hmm. And that is where I started actually to look more deeply into changing the things, because although I was generally speaking doing positive discipline by then, the anger issues were still very big. And it terrified me. I was like, what if one day I won't be able to stop myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that is, and I had found a coach, in fact, where she helped me at the time. And while I always knew kind of that self-care is important, like many other parents, it still goes back in the back burner, right?
Yeah.
And that is where I, in fact, then decided that I have to do it regularly. And once I did that, I could react less to their issues. But it's still hard because there are still days where, obviously, like you said, where we still react because, I don't know, we're tired more than usual.
Sure.
We're running around and we can, you know, so life.
Or even
happens,
like,
right?
Yeah, we just, my whole family just had COVID and I did not. Mm-hmm. And by the time they all three had it, nobody was wearing masks. And I was feeling like I was the one that was slowly isolating. And I snapped. I got really upset with my son about, I don't even know what it was. And my husband was like, whoa. And I said, I kind of sat down by myself for a moment. And I realized what was happening for me is I had so much stress around not feeling like feeling like they had all, they're in the clear now because COVID. Yeah. And didn't hit us very hard, fortunately. Nobody really cared about whether or not I got it because they were in their own experience. And so that's how I felt. And so I was like, I don't want to have to tell you to wash your hands and blah. So like you're saying, you know, like we can be really vigilant about our self-care and life still happens. And I love that you talk about self-care because I think it's a foundational piece. And I know when I'm doing my daily self-care, which happens in the morning and quiet time, reading, journaling, meditating, then later in the day when things come up, I am more willing to pause, to realize like, okay, here's an opportunity. And for me, it's feeling like a baby step for me is like, feel your feet, feel my feet on the floor, taking a nice cleansing inhale and giving myself pause to decide to show up a certain way. And sometimes I don't know what the situation is calling for. And so I won't say anything.
Yeah.
I'll just stand there. Right. Or I've gotten really good at asking my daughter, like, what do you need right now?
Yeah. That's
instead of like,
I really learned as well.
Yeah. But I think those two things, like what you said, the self-care works with this in the moment willingness. Yeah. And so you need both, I think, to really start. And then it does like you're creating a new muscle and it starts to become over time and over lots of repetition and practice, it begins to get easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And as you were saying about, you know, listening and asking them, what do they need? Mm-hmm. And that has been for me such a relief, a kind of burden off my shoulders, because I don't need to think myself what you need anymore. Like, you know, I'm asking you, what do you need from me? Do you need me to do something? Do you want me to just listen? What do you need from me? And that was such a game changer. And I think we tend as parents to try and save our children from everything. So as soon as a problem comes up, we don't even listen properly. We just try and get rid of it.
Yeah, because it's like I'm realizing more and more just how hard it is for me to be with my kids in their suffering. Like, even if it's something like a blowout at basketball, you know, in the basketball game, there was, you know, my son had one particular game where they lost by like 45 points. It was pretty brutal. And he was just going off in the car.
Yeah.
Complaining and blaming and swearing and all the things. And I mean, it was so hard for me to just be present. And I did observe, like, my husband was, every time my husband asked him a question, I was like, no, you're just adding to this.
No.
Oh my God. I was like, how much longer? But I, you know, I really just had to sit. And as I sat with it, that's when I really noticed, like, wow, it is so hard for me to hold space for him to be in the emotional turmoil that he's in right now. Like, I want to talk him out of it. I want to make him feel better. I want to get out of the car. Like,
yeah,
it was really interesting. It was really interesting. Yeah.
It's hard. And yes, my husband's on that asking him. I'm like, just leave him alone.
Let him go off the rails for a minute.
Uncomfortableness comes up for them, right? In different ways.
Yeah. And you know, the work that I did with my daughter, we went through dialectic behavioral therapy, which is a specific type of therapy for kids, for people who are, you know, it was created for people with borderline personality disorder. Okay. And, but it's being used in eating disorder clinics and with kids who have high anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, self-harm. It's a really powerful program. And my daughter and I went through it together. The adolescent program has the parent and child come together in a group setting once a week. And then she worked with a therapist once a week as well. But one of the really powerful learnings that I got was the way that I thought I was being helpful was actually really invalidating to my daughter. You know, she struggles with anxiety and depression. And so I would say things like, you know, why don't you just try going outside or doing some yoga or, you know, offering up. And what I learned was, you know, all I really needed to do was to say, that sounds really hard. That sounds really hard. So she's really taught me. And so, and still I find myself, she'll kind of lob me some information and I'll be looking at her knowing like, why, I have some thoughts on that. Right. And but I'll pause and say, so do you need me to listen right now or to offer my thoughts or validation? Like, what do you need? And sometimes she eye rolls me with that. And it's just like, I don't need anything. I'm fine. I'm like, okay, great. You know, great, great. And sometimes she'll just, you know, she'll let me know, like, I want to know, what do you think? But at least this question, like you said, this question of what do you need, maintains the space that is still in service to them versus making it be about me and what I think and what I want to offer, which is tough as an adult.
Yeah.
Because we think we know best. We think we know more. And the truth is, there, our teens are the only ones who really know what's going on with them. And we have to honor that.
And we can't kind of, I see that, like, you know, especially when they're struggling, you just want to take that struggle away. So despite it all, we still want to give them our advice. And as you said, it's not bad, but they really need that space, right? And
it's not bad if that's what they want.
Yeah.
If that's not what they are looking for.
Yes.
And it actually can be bad because it can also send the message of, you know, I don't think you're capable, or I don't think you know, or, I mean, there's lots of messages that are being sent when we jump in to fix. And so I think, you know, asking that question, asking that permission allows them to stay in an open, receptive mind, versus shutting down. Ugh, my mom, she's always telling me what to do, or she doesn't get it. Cause sometimes we're like, what about this? And they're like,
yeah,
you don't understand. And it's true.
It's true.
So before we offer things up, like, maybe do some more listening and some more curiosity, right? Tell me more about that is another one of my favorite back pocket responses when I'm like, I don't really know what to say. So I'll say, oh, tell me more.
You know? Yeah, that's a good one. It's true.
It's a good one.
And a question popped up to my head now. So in view of what we've been saying about relationships and how we try and maintain and the trust through conversation, when you have a teen and there is problems with their friends, right? And they tell you about it maybe and so on. How do we navigate that without making it worse? Because sometimes
Well, I think it's the same, it's that same concept of looking for someone to listen? Do you need support? Like, do you want to talk? I remember when my son specifically was younger and he'd have, you know, there was a couple kids that just weren't nice and they're still not very nice, but anyway, that's their problem. We moved. And we would talk about, like, what are some responses you can have, right, in your back pocket when things come up. So, you know, I think the first thing is, do they want you to listen or do they want you to get involved? Are they asking for you to help them or are they asking for you to hear them and see them? So, I mean, without knowing more specifics, I think that, you know, I think it's important as parents to say, like, if somebody's life is in danger, this is bigger than our kids should hold. And that other child needs help. So let's look for ways we can get them some help. So there's that, right? There's that extreme. Yeah. Yeah. But as far as, like, friend drama, you know, I think asking them how, you know, what do you want? Do you want to maintain this relationship? Do you want to take a break from this relationship? Or are you done with this relationship?
Yeah.
And depending on what they want from that place, well, how might you go about doing that? Mm-hmm. You know, what are some ideas that you have? So that curiosity is really powerful. And then, you know, and then again, it's, well, do you want to hear my thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Because probably we are thinking that they want, for example, to stop the relationship. And their idea is just that at the moment they're pissed off at them and, you know, and they're just unloading on you. And we might say or do things that might make it worse then, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think, so I, the whole keep it, take a break or get rid of it comes from Rosalind Weissman wrote Queen Bees and Wannabes.
Yeah, I have the book. I haven't read it yet, but I have it there.
Oh, it's a good one.
And my to-do list of never-ending books.
Yeah. Me too. There's a lot. That she also wrote a book called Masterminds and Wingmen, which is kind of the boy version of that. Yes. But it's really about peer groups and roles inside of groups. And that was one of the things that she talked about was, you know, supporting our kids around, and maybe they're not even thinking about, well, yeah, do I want, I just want to take a break from this person. Am I done? Do I want to figure out how to move forward? So I think asking that question is also a place for them to be like, huh, what do I want? And we're developing that planting that little seed for them in the future with relationship, being able to really be curious about, well, what do I want?
You know? It's very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was so lovely talking to you, Casey. I look forward to listen to you more. I enjoy your podcast very much. It's always very helpful. I'll put them a link with my own podcast here so that other people can come and listen to you and hear your advice. And I'm so happy for you to be joining with the Be Sproutable. I had started listening and looking around the Be Sproutable, and it's very nice. So knowing that you joined there and that now there's kind of continuity, because they were more younger children, right?
They really focus on the littles, and we were actually doing a lot of referring back and forth. And so it made sense for us to just join forces. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I wish you a wonderful afternoon, right?
Thank you. Yep. Heading that way. Thank you so much. And thank you for all you offer through this podcast and your work, Melissa. I'm really inspired by, you know, your passion to spread the word in Malta and beyond. I know that, you know, it's hard. It's hard being in a community that is a little bit contrary to what it is that you're trying to share. And
Appreciate it's getting better. Slowly.
Yay. Good. Awesome. All right.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.